We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Hey, thank you, thank you, thank you to Ryan Height and Mason Mohan. They do a lot of filling in for me. These have been busy, busy months. I have to tell you, I was on a special mission right before Super Tuesday. I had some research I was doing and some ideas that I had, and I was traveling a little bit, mostly up to Pennsylvania, but that wasn't even a Super Tuesday, but that's where things were going on. And so there's a lot going on, and then I don't loathe to share too much, but my father had a little bit of a procedure. He's doing fine now, but he had to go in. Anyway, in the last month or two, Ryan Height, our communications director at the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, I also call him the producer of this program, has been filling in. Awesome. Does an awesome job. He's got a great, great voice. He's very, very smart, and he knows politics. He's in the mold of Phyllis Schlafly, meaning he knows how politics works and is a conservative. Then you got to put those two together. We need conservatives. That's great. We need people that know politics. That's great. But if you know politics and you're not conservative, that's no good. And if you know conservatism and you're conservative, but you don't know how politics works, it doesn't work either. So thank you, Ryan Height. And Mason Mohan's our newest employee at the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Super guy. Does a lot of writing, does a lot of work. Just thanks to those guys for filling in. I want to make sure to hit that and say that to you all. So we've got the State of the Union. And probably by the time you're hearing this, I'm pre-recording it because there's so much action down at the Capitol. I've got to go to a couple different meetings. Well, a couple of them are social. I guess I got two social meetings, one meeting about policy. So I'm recording it a little early. But let me tell you, the State of the Union is great. Well, you're like, what? Wait a second. Is Ed Martin saying that? It is true. Here on the Pro-America Report, let me say it. The State of the Union is great. And you know why it's great? Because of the people. The people in this country are special. They are good, good people that want good things. And so the state of the government has never been worse. It's actually a disaster. The State of the Union, don't believe the hype of the social media, big media. They're liars. They want to tear us apart. There's I don't know, 5% of the country that are really, really sick. They want to do transgender stuff. They want to gut our institutions. They want to pit black versus white, man versus woman. Those, let's say 5%, they're just lunatics. They should be pitied. You should be pitying them. And when I say they're lunatics, it's not really their fault. A lot of them are brainwashed. And by the way, it might be more than 5%, but there's a bunch of them. But it's not everyone. Most of us are good people that want good things, that aren't that hard to each other, that aren't mean to each other. The State of the Union is great. The state of the government has never, ever been worse. It's a crisis. All of the things that the government was supposed to do, excuse me, all the things that the government is supposed to do, they're shirking their duty. They're not keeping us safe. They're not administering justice. They're not kind of letting the states and local sovereignty flourish. They're not doing the things. Look, I've been trying this. I know I talked to you about this a bunch, and I'm kind of torqued up. I'm really upset. Earlier on Thursday, one of the another January 6th prisoner was busted into their home, taken prisoner. I won't talk about the specifics yet. It may come out. It's nasty, nasty. We are in a situation where we're being bullied. So you can get it. Don't have to think of it in ideological, theological, geopolitical, none of those terms. Just hear me. We're being bullied by our government. We're being bullied by our government. And here's the way I tell you. I got a little parable. You ready for my parable? There once was a one-room schoolhouse, and there was one teacher. And the teacher started school every day by bringing the 12 children in. And the 12 children were told, I'm the teacher. When you're in class, you do what I say. We're going to learn how to read and write. We're going to be smart when we're done with this. We'll all work together. And then every day during recess, you're going to go outside. And during lunch, you're going to go outside. You get your lunch, you go play around. And I'm not going out there. I got too much to do. But out in those places, you have to be good to each other. And it turns out there were bullies. And one of the bullies was a big guy, right? Well, he was a physical bully. And one of the bullies was a sneaky talker, you know, someone who played games with the truth and spun things around. Both of them were bullies. And so what happened? The teacher had to get the bullies under control. He said, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. And so as long as the teacher was there, it was wonderful. One day the teacher retired. He taught there for years and years and years. And the next teacher came in and the teacher said, we're going to learn. And the teacher then turned out that the teacher was related to the two bullies. And instead of having the bullies under control, the bullies went wild. And whenever someone said, this isn't going right, the teacher would say, you're the one wrong. And pretty soon the environment that had gone on so wonderfully, where people certainly had, you know, there were bullies under the original teacher, but they weren't allowed to do this because they kept it in check. They kept it in check, not just by the rules, but by the whole setup, the working together, the system. Now, we're like that second teacher. Joe Biden is, he's decided only his relatives, only his friends, they'll be the ones, and not only will they be favored, that used to be common. We used to tolerate some favoritism as, you know, something that happened, not perfect, but happened. Now we are seeing that the relatives and the connected to someone like Joe Biden, they're not just favored, they're bullies. They're bullies in the Department of Justice. They're bullies in the justice system in general. They're bullies in the economy. They're bullies in our universities. They're bullies in our lives. They're bullies on the bus, in the subway, on the street. They're bullies. In the media, in social media, horrendous. And they're using all of the strength of government against us. But don't be distracted. Don't be distracted. I'm not saying that just changing out the teacher is going to solve everything. That's not true. We got a lot more work to do. But I am saying that everybody's good. Everybody's good. Everybody should be looked at in the image and likeness of God. And we should figure out, hold them accountable. We got a lot of accountability to hold. But only because if you don't hold them accountable, see the school teacher, the original school teacher, the good school teacher. If you hold them accountable, people work together better. They stay together better. They do better. They read, they write, they learn. So the state of the union is extraordinary. And I would extend that even especially to, you're going to be surprised at this, the immigrants of the last 15 to 20 years have seen, I think, that they want to be a part of America. I used to be frustrated that we allowed so many people in and didn't control it. This is before Biden. Even under Trump, there were too many people coming and we weren't controlling it. And there was ways people could get in it. But ultimately, I have to say, I've gone to churches now. I've gone to meetings. More and more of the people, especially Hispanic, they want to be American. They're looking at this bully Biden. He can take the bully pulpit at the State of the Union. He tried to use the bully pulpit. He's barely coherent. It's terrible. It's a tragedy. His wife is a bully. His family are bullies. The bullies, you don't let somebody go through this. This is a sadness. We should be sad about it. And then we realize that not only is it bad for him, it's bad for us because of what's happening. But be that as it may, these immigrants, a lot of them are really trying to become American. The ones that aren't are the 10 million since the last 3 years because we don't know who they are. We have no idea. We do know they're Chinese nationals, but Pakistani nationals, African nationals, men coming. We know that their backgrounds are from nations that are hostile to America. We got a lot of problems, but the state of the union of people, because remember, we don't get our sovereignty from the king. We don't get it from Biden giving it to us. We don't get it from our governor. We don't get it from our mayor. We, the people, get our sovereignty from God. And when we recognize that, then we share it with each other in the union of these United States. It's the United States. It's not America. It's the United States of America. Very distinctly, our sovereignty is shared by each of us through our states, by the way. Very distinct, very specific approach. And then the government, the federal government, has one slice, some parts of that, not the whole thing. And they don't own it. They don't control it. And so when I say the state of the union, our unitedness is awesome. It's awesome. It's got all the markings of the greatness it had before. We got a lot of work to do. And the first thing that we have to do over and over and over again is point out these bullies that are putting American citizens in jail, that are using, you know, the IRS admitted they're using AI to target people, to make them, to hold them accountable for tax violations. Let me tell you a secret. They've created a tax code that can make sure that every American is a criminal because they've set that code up and they move it, change it up and down. And you can't barely keep up with it. You got to fight to find tax accountants who will help you with it. So if they want to, they can get you, and they've shown they will. And if they want to, they can steer media, big tech and big media, in such a way to harm you and me and everybody else that they don't like. All in the name of what? Their vision, their union, the bullies' union, the union of bullies. They want to control us, and they can't. They won't. We won't let them. So whatever you hear, even the reactions to it, just know the state of the union in this great country, this great nation, our state of the union is awesome. It's great. Be excited. Be fired up. Be, in great spirits, because we've got so much coming. And remember, the state of the government, Joe Biden, it's a disaster. Distrust and verify everything. They're lying is how you should start, and then see if you can verify it and go from there. All right, we got to take a break. Again, we'll be right back. Ed Martin, go to ProAmericaReport.com. Right there, you'll see my writings. And also visit PhyllisSchlafly.com. Sign up for the Daily Wink. Be right back. Ed Martin, Pro America Report, back in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Once again, I just had about a 2-minute conversation with our next guest that I should have had the mic on, and we've been all listening because mostly I was confessing to her that I've changed my diet habits and she was encouraging me. But we'll get into all that because our next guest has written a book, Linda Tyler, author of a book. It's called Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook, Delicious Whole Food Recipes to Reduce Inflammation and Promote Health. She is a cooking instructor, a recipe developer, she's a writer. She teaches at Mount Hood Community College, and I think Portland Community College, maybe in Oregon, does a lot of lifestyle coaching on this, and her website, nutritionfacts.org. You can check this all out. So welcome, Linda. How are you?
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Ed. It's great to be here.
Well, it's very interesting. And graciousvegan.com is also one of your sites, which has got a lot to read. That's where I was reading up on you. First, about the audience. I'm not sure there's ever been a time in history where people, Americans, have eaten worse, but are also aware of it now. Maybe it's just me, because I was telling you that I'm kind of aware. I cut out all bread, not an Atkins diet or keto, but just all bread, because I thought bread is killing me. And I had aches. I got rid of the aches from the bread. So it feels like more people are eating worse because they have access to all this junk food, but that they know it. Am I reading that right?
You are exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. You know, our food supply in this country is so unhealthy. I read the other day that almost 60% of the food in the food supply in our country is ultra processed foods. And if you really just stop in the grocery aisle anywhere and look around you, there is so much junk there, so much processed food. And you're right that people know that there's a problem. You know, people hear the word inflammation and know it's a problem, but inflammation can be very hard to understand. And so that's one of the reasons I wrote the cookbook, to help people feel better, to just explain what inflammation is. So that's my whole first chapter, is like, what is inflammation? What causes it? What is it related to? But you're exactly right. The bread, that's just ultra refined white flour, you know, all the good stuff taken out of the wheat kernels. And we just have so much bread around us, so many cakes, cookies, you know, other foods with saturated fats, you know, cheese and cold cuts and beef. You know, there's so many foods with the components that cause inflammation, but people know it and they want to change, but, you know, it's hard to change, number one, but it's also just all around us.
Linda Tyler is our guest again. GraciousVegan.com is the site. I mentioned another one earlier. You can tell me if that's a good one too, but I know this one's got a lot to explain, because I think a lot of listeners need to explain. But your first tip you said to me when we were talking, you said, first thing you got to do is try not to have the worst stuff in the way, in your fridge or in your eating patterns. And it sounds like a silly thing to say, but that's about right. right. Like if it's in the fridge and you're hungry, you're going to look for something. So you got to get some of those things out. What's the single worst thing? Is it the bread? Is it meat? I mean, my kids are all growing at that age where they're bright and thinking. And one of them the other day said, Dad, there's no way that we ate as much meat 1,000 years ago, right? You know, I mean, there's no way. You'd eat like once a month, you'd have meat and it would be enough protein. Is it the meat that we eat? Is it the bread? Is it the sugar? It's probably the sugar. That's the worst thing happening to us.
Yeah, you have a smart kid there because they're exactly right. I mean, we evolved for thousands and thousands of years. Our direct ancestor, Homo sapien, was eating lots of plants. And researchers and archaeologists have shown that they ate predominantly plants. So our system, you know, evolved to handle plants and to have so much meat and so many animal products like cheese and dairy and eggs all the time is not good for our system. Our system is not good. Unlike other animals, our systems are not good at digesting those things. And saturated fat and meat and animal products and vegetable oils and coconut oils and all those things, the saturated fats are really bad for inflammation. So that's a key thing to think about, the things that have the saturated fat. And then processed foods. Yeah, the ultra processed foods, the refined sugars, the refined grains, you know, those cause sugar spikes in your blood. And once you have that kind of sugar spike, it causes oxidation, which means there's lots of free radicals, which are unstable molecules, and they're just pinging around in your body, damaging your cells. And then your immune system says, I got to fix it. And that's what causes inflammation. So we don't want to damage our body because the immune system wants to help. And when the immune system helps, that's what inflammation is. And then it brings its own host of problems as well and makes us vulnerable. So yes, it's the animal products, but also the other kinds of vegetable oils and shortenings, and then also the refined grains, processed foods, refined sugars.
I believe that we have way too much milk. Everybody has way, way too much milk. But I have a harder time when I was reading your work. Again, we're talking with Linda Tyler, and her website is graciousvegan.com. And her book, which is everywhere you can buy books, is called Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook. But when I read about you, at one point you gave up meat and you were like, this is making me better, but I'm going to try to give up dairy and eggs. That's harder for me. Like, egg to me is an easy protein thing that's not as heavy. It's not like if you have, you know, 6 pieces of bacon, but I hear that a lot. People, once you start to really pay attention, you move on, that the dairy and the eggs are necessary to cut out. Is that right? I mean, or is there a sliding, is the thing to do, get your feet in the water, get your toe in the water first?
Yeah, you know, I have found that it's sort of a personality thing. Some right. people want to just give things up all at once, cold turkey, as it were, cold tofurkey.
I was going to say, wait a second, you're not allowed to do that.
And then people want to do it gradually. So like, I've had some one-on-one students who really like their eggs at breakfast. And, yeah. you know, one of the things I've found works well for them is hummus toast. So using a very, you know, a whole grain bread, not using tons of slices of whole grain breads, but really put a lot of hummus on a slice of wheat toast or grain toast, and then put lots of toppings. So maybe it's salsa, maybe it's tomatoes, maybe it's olives. So there's lots of ways to load up on good whole grains, legumes, seeds, nuts. There's ways to do that. So different people have different, you know, foods they want to hang on to. And in the case of eggs, for example, you know, the yolks are the worst for you. So if you can minimize the yolks, that's good. If you want to do it gradually, cheese, you know, cheese really is high in saturated fat. I think in our food system, that is the leads to the most consumption of saturated fats in the population. So, you know, again, I like on my burritos and tacos, I like guacamole. I make a nut-based sour cream. I make a nut-based crema. I make some nut-based cheeses. So there are definitely ways to get your creaminess and enjoy things and not have to eat cheese.
Again, the book, which I'm looking at, the Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook, Delicious Whole Food Recipes to Reduce Inflammation and Promote Health. Linda Tyler, her website is graciousvegan.com. This book is from our friends at Skyhorse Publishing, Tony Lyons and the crew. How about cakes? Like, I think I know the answer, but I want you to tell me, like, when you have a birthday, then do you make some, do you love some kind of super sweet that you break down once a year or no? No.
I'm not going to say I never have a teaspoon of sugar here or there, but, okay. You know, like I have a cake in the cookbook that's super right. good. It's actually, you know, oranges, citrus are anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. So you actually boil two navel oranges. You blend those boiled oranges up with some other wet ingredients, then use cornmeal or polenta as the main dry ingredient. Wow. And it makes just a lovely, dense orange ginger cake that I find to be really good. And I have a ginger infused cream topping that's made mostly of cashews and tofu. You don't even taste that there's tofu in it. And, you know, that is a wonderful cake. I also have a chocolate sauce made from almond butter and cocoa powder and date syrup.
All right, I'm getting hungry now.
Super good. If you have, you know, some yogurt, some berries, some granola. I have a granola recipe here that's very mm-hmm. healthy. You know, you can just start to combine things in ways like, hey, this isn't a regular cake.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
matter if it's good, if it tastes good, but cakes right. are really, really bad for you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
The shortening and the sugar in the frosting are really bad for you.
All right. Well, thank you. I know they are, but thank you, Linda Tyler. And again, her website is graciousvegan.com. It's nice there. But the book is The Plant-Based Anti-Inflammatory Cookbook. Check it out from Skyhorse Publishing. We got to go because we're up to against the break. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. I'll put all these links to Linda's websites up on social media. And we'll be right back on the Pro America Report. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest has been with us a few times now in the last few months. He's very good and very good on China and international affairs. Kenneth Raposa, he's a former reporter for the Wall Street Journal, lived and worked in Brazil, covered China, and has covered emerging markets all over the world. And he's now an analyst over at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. He read a piece over at the Daily Caller a week or so ago. I'll put it up on social media, but about the fentanyl crisis. And I agreed with it, and I thought, I really want to hammer this home. So welcome back, Ken Raposa. How are you, sir?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So here's what I want to say. I believe China makes this stuff, right? I believe China is the greatest producer of the stuff that makes fentanyl. But as you point out in this piece, this whole fight starts with Mexico, because Mexico, you got to stop it coming into the country. First of all, Ken, in your years and years of covering all kinds of things, you would have seen the war on drugs, you would have seen even COVID. Has there ever been a story that impacts more people that is gets it seems to get at least, I can say, intermittent coverage, if not way less coverage? We're talking about 100,000 people a year dead, boom, dead. And it doesn't seem to, it pops up for a minute and then it fades away. Am I missing it when I think that's what I notice?
Well, I think the story is now being shifted into one of what our inner cities are increasingly looking like, right? So the fentanyl story is part of the border crisis story. It's part of the net migration from California, New York, and San Francisco and New York City story, right? So it's become part of that rather than just saying, but you know, I will say this though, Ed, forget the mainstream media, right? They've peaked and are in decline. If you go on YouTube, if you go to the alternative guys like a Tim Pool or whatever, you could find countless videos and documentaries of what it's like to walk around the city of Oakland today or in the Tenderloin of San Francisco, all over the place. And there's one guy named Tyler Oliveira, Portuguese American guy, I believe. And he's like myself. And he does a lot of videos on this where he goes into these towns and he talks to people, you know, about what the situation is like and asks the addicts and the homeless, you know, what do you want? What's the solution? You know? So these are things that you might get a 60 Minutes report on this once a year, right? You'll get a Trump story about how bad he is and he's the end of democracy. You get that every day, every minute, but you'll get a fentanyl story once a year. But there's plenty of guys in the non-mainstream media who cover this really closely. posting. I think that's where you have to go to really see what's going on in these cities now, what and what it looks like in the Tenderloin of San Francisco, for example.
We're talking again with Ken Raposa, but it is true that a lot of people, and I was one of them, would spend time saying China's got to stop importing this stuff. In this piece, you say, look, you can stop, you can change this dramatically just by saying to at the border. And by the way, the last paragraph of this is exactly what I think and feel. Maybe second to last. Washington should tell Mexico, quote, either you cut fentanyl shipments in half and help us police the border, or we'll whack you. I don't know if that's a good choice of word, but we'll whack you with a 25% tariff in the name of national security. We proved under Trump that China, we put tariffs on China. Everybody said the economy will end if you do it. It didn't end it. In fact, it modified behavior. So is anybody, has even Trump talked about that kind of action?
Yes. Let's not forget. In 2018, I believe it was, maybe as more recent as 2019, Trump said, look, if you don't police the border, he wasn't talking about fentanyl, but again, fentanyl and the border go hand in hand because that's where most of it comes in through. It's not being flown in on an Etihad flight or China Airlines plane. He said, if you don't deal with this border issue, we're going to end NAFTA. It's over.
Right.
And so that began the Remain in Mexico policy. And if you remember, the flow from migrants into the United States slowed. Okay.
Right.
Biden came in, and one of his first orders of business in 2021 was to remove it, the Remain in Mexico policy, something he called racist and xenophobic. Of course, AMLO, the president of Mexico, Obrador, right? Andres Obrador, he always hated it. Well, why does Mexico hate it? And I say this in the Daily Caller piece. This is something. Let's think something very basic. Mexicans living in the United States, both legal and illegal, sent last year back home to Mexico to their family a record-breaking $63 billion to the country. Okay.
Wow.
$63 billion. Okay, sent. So me and you, we're working wherever it is we're working. We're working in a bank. While we're working in the strawberry fields and we're sending them the equivalent of $63 billion. In 2021, Pemex, that's the abbreviation for the Mexican oil company, Petróleos de Mexico, right? Pemex,
yeah,
made net revenue of $71 or $72 billion. Pretty close. Pretty right. close to what we sent there in remittances. So as I say in Daily Caller, and I'm going to repeat myself for the listeners who read this, that's the way it goes in radio land.
Right.
We are sending Mexico the equivalent of, you know, a year's oil revenue, and they're sending us a national security and a public health crisis. So unless you take the fight to Mexico and tell them they have to do something about it, then nothing will get done. You know, I mean, there are other remedies too, Ed. You can just build more treatment centers and put the homeless and the addicts in there, and, you know, hopefully they're happy there. And, you know, you talked about how that story doesn't get a lot of coverage. The fentanyl crisis doesn't get a lot of coverage. But the coverage that I've seen by these independent reporters, you ask these people who live on the streets, a lot of them will tell you they don't want to go to the treatment centers. They don't want to live in the homeless shelters either.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure that if you and I built, you know, 20 treatment centers in the outskirts of Oakland and New York, if they would be they would be success.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's another. I blame Geraldo Rivera for that, but we'll get that into that another day. I'm only half kidding when I say that. But back for one second. I like this idea a lot. You say if you threaten tariffs on exports from Mexico, you would immediately have Ford and Frigidaire, because they have huge plants down there. They would be going to the Mexican city government saying, yeah, well, let's just stop this. We like making we like making refrigerators and car components here. That's better than fentanyl, you guys. But back to the reality then, Ken Raposa is our guest and again, author as well as an analyst now. Is it the cartels? I mean, is Mexico just a cartel with a sheen of a national government?
Well, I often say that if not for NAFTA, Mexico would look like Colombia did in the 1980s when Pablo Escobar pretty much ran it along with the FARC. Look, I'm not saying that Obrador has it easy to beat up on seven cartels that the United States government wants to sanction, as if sanctions against the cartels are going to stop fentanyl.
Right.
That's like saying, let's sanction the Russian oligarchs and that'll stop Putin from going to war with Ukraine. That
right.
didn't work, did it?
Right.
So he's got his work cut out for him. But let's look at what Colombia did anyone who grew up in the 80s knows that Columbia was basically right. I mean, Miami Vice was big in the 80s. It was all about Colombian drug lords, right? Remember Calderon, right? Was the big star, the bad guy, Miami Vice season one. And Cali and Medellin drug cartels, the FARC is a different animal, but Cali and Medellin drug cartels were defeated not through sanctions, not by you, it was threatened by law enforcement and by taking it to these guys with the ammo.
Right.
And so that's what's going to really be done to the cartels. And Nikki Haley, who's now out of the race, she said something interesting. She said, hey, look, maybe we got to send in some special forces guys in there. And I'll say this. Think about this for a second, Ed. Think about this. We hear about this all the time. A drone goes in, blows up a car carrying a supposed terrorist, right? Blows it up.
Yep.
Collateral damage be damned. We don't care. Maybe the passenger was a terrorist. Maybe he really was. And in the back seat was 2 6-year-old girls. We don't care if they're dead. Collateral damage be damned. We could do that. And we do that on a yearly basis in Yemen and Saudi and Syria. Okay. Yep. But we can't do that to a meth lab or a fentanyl lab. We can't do that in Mexico. We can't blow up a go fast boat sitting off the coast of Tijuana, ready to go to San Diego or whatever under the cover of night. We know that it's a smuggler boat. We know this. We can't do that.
Why are we not doing that?
I think, Ed, that's the stuff of books and maybe conspiracy theory, right? I mean, I don't know. Other than what I would say is that it's because the powers that be are either hamstrung by law, which never stopped them before,
or corruption. I've heard somebody float the idea that that maybe the cartels and the CIA they wash money through. I mean, at a certain point, you say this system is so bad for the people in the country. It's hard to even understand, like a liberal, like a lunatic progressive who wants this level of destruction, and yet we sit around and take it. It's unbelievable. Ken, I'm out of time, unfortunately. Ken Raposa, sorry to do it to you. We'll have you again. Ken Raposa again is this piece was in the Daily Caller. .com. He writes a number of different places. Really good voice. Thanks very much, Ken.
Thanks for having me on it.
All right, we'll take a break. Goes fast with him. That's a good topic. Well, I'll put that story up on social media. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
2020 was a year fraught with change and crisis. And one major change seems to have been forgotten by all of us. The COVID-19 pandemic swept the world, resulting in life-altering lockdowns. And Black Lives Matter protests caused widespread destruction in almost every big city. With so many big events, people seldom remember the insidious and dishonest change that happened in our election system. The implementation of widespread mail-in voting. America First Legal exposed a tremendous amount of misinformation surrounding mail-in voting by suing the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, known as CISA. The lawsuit unearthed documents that showed the deep state knew there were risks to mail-in voting, but they kept these risks from the public under the guise of fighting disinformation. September 2020 documents show CISA found in-person voting did not increase the spread of COVID-19. CISA also recognized that there would be great challenges with voting by mail, including the process of mailing and returning ballots, the high number of improperly completed ballots, and the shortage of personnel to process ballots in a prompt manner. CISA recognized many areas in which mail-in voting would invite fraud, foremost among them being the implementation in a compressed timeline. That is to say, they knew rolling out mail-in voting quickly would invite fraud, but a quick rollout is exactly what happened. Meanwhile, CISA monitored the supposed narrative of mail-in voting being risky and even contracted with the well-known consulting firm Deloitte to report on supposed misinformation narratives spawning on social media. In turn, CISA pressured social media companies to suppress this alleged fake news narrative. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, they were dishonest with the American people. Not only did they know mail-in voting had a risk of fraud, but they kept that from we the people. And they actively censored anyone who was pointing out what they internally knew to be factually true.
From Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, this has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report with Ed Martin. Election fraud has the power to destroy the America we know and love. Never again can we allow an election to be stolen. At PhyllisSchlafly.com, you'll find reasonable, workable strategies for assuring the integrity of every future election. Visit PhyllisSchlafly.com today. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Hey, welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height filling in here today for Mr. Ed Martin. Glad to be here. Thank you for letting me be a part of the show today. And it's been a good one. Good couple of guests there and a great starting off to the show. Well, I mean, I don't mean to pat myself on the back too much. This is talking about Super Tuesday. But again, I am excited by the Super Tuesday results. I think that it's a landslide, not just for Trump. I think that it shows a landslide for moving forward in a good and a better, in a different direction for the Republican Party, for the conservative movement here in America. And that is definitely countered by an interesting thing that's happening on the other side of the aisle. And that's what I want to talk about here in the wrap up. Just real quick at the end of the show, before we do, though, let me remind you, go to ProAmericaReport.com. That's Ed's Substack. You'll be able to see what he's writing about, talking about long form, often coincides with the show. And of course, go to ProAmericaReport.com, or I'm sorry, PhyllisSchlafly.com. That is where you'll find the archives of the Pro America Report, the podcast standalone segments, the news and links and all of the different resources that we talk about on the show, as well as that's where you can sign up for the wonderful Wink, the daily email every weekday that comes into your inbox first thing in the morning. Very important. Go and sign up for that at PhyllisSchlafly.com. Find Ed's Substack at ProAmericaReport.com. You will not regret either of those decisions. I promise they will be good for your future 2024 news and opinion consumption. But what we are here to wrap up the show and talk about is the Democrat primary that is happening right now. What primary, you say? There's an incumbent president. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Now, don't hear me overblowing anything, because I think that you'll see a lot of Fox News types, no offense, but kind of, saying, you know, oh, tens of thousands of uncommitted voters voted yesterday not for Biden. Well, that's true. They did. There were many, many, many votes. But here's what it means. This is interesting. And you'll hear a lot of people, I think, try to overblow this. This doesn't exactly electorally put Joe Biden at risk of losing his own primary, nowhere near it. However, there have been an incredible amount of protest votes for no one, literally for no one, for either what's the phraseology that we've got here, for uncommitted, for no particular preference. Joe Biden is not losing per se, but he is losing tens of thousands of votes in some different states. Yesterday we saw it in Minnesota, Alabama, several places, I think Virginia as well. A pretty significant percentage points of the Democrat primary went to either uncommitted or someone else, none of these candidates, whatever the different language is. It's a pretty significant protest. Now, make no mistake, there are different reasons. It's not that the Democrat Party is turning conservative, that people are saying, oh, we don't want Joe Biden, he's too far to the left. No, in fact, this is a lot of different pieces of the left saying that Joe Biden isn't left enough, or isn't their version of the left, or isn't whatever it is, fill in the blank. But regardless of the specifics, whether it is the huge blocks of Muslim voters in Minnesota saying don't vote for Joe Biden because he's been too pro-Israel, or it's, you know, this or that or the other, you put it all together, what you're seeing is what Ed has described as the great civil war in the Democrat Party. And this is the inevitability of what the left has done. The left has put together such a disastrous conglomeration of identity politics, minority victimhood groups, that they are without fail going to at some point implode, because all of these groups have become pitted against each other. There's no way for it all to make sense. There's no way for there to be a cohesive place in which this politically makes sense and can work together, because you've set up these groups as the favorites. You've set up all of this contradictory stuff. I mean, this is, we're seeing this culturally play out in leftist darlings of past years, like the gay and lesbian champions, feminist champions that are running into a real hard conflict with the new transgender fad. And guess what? The left has created these two different monsters that are now at odds with each other. And for those of us who don't buy into any of this leftism, you look at it and go, well, no, of course. No, what's the phrase from my era, from the millennial era? No, duh. That was going to happen at some point. This is the product of what you've done. This is what you've created. Welcome to what happens when you strip out moral truth, when you strip out objective reality, that truth is separate from your own whims and wishes. It doesn't work. Truth is not relative. Well, This is what happens. And I think that electorally, we're starting to see it come back now. Whether it's going to take away, I don't think it's going to ruin Joe Biden's chances. But I think that this does show that there are several chinks in the armor of Democrats this year. Typically, a political movement, a political party that is lockstep with the agenda, with the person, to a fault. 2016, stealing the election from Bernie Sanders, anybody? This is the party that does not have wild hairs outside the boundaries. They are lockstep in unison, and we are seeing disunity this year from all of the monsters that they have created, from all of the various contradictions that they have boiled together here into this noxious stew of leftism. Here we are, and they are fighting each other, and it is going to become more and more and more of a problem. What is a nagging issue now, just a little wound, is festering, and it will be worse. It will get worse. And guess what? It's a product of their own doing. And I'm okay with that. This is a movement that must go away. We don't want communists, Marxists, leftists. This is antithetical to everything that America stands for. This is antithetical to classical liberalism itself, to the principles of liberty and our republic. It needs to go away. If it implodes on itself, so be it. That's what we're seeing happen over on the Democrat side of this republic, presidential primary. And just take a step back and you'll see all of the grave consequences that I think are coming, and very quickly. So how it affects exactly Joe Biden and the choice of running mate this year, we'll see. But that is definitely something to keep an eye on. It is definitely a massive ideological train wreck that we are watching in real time in 2024. So stick with us. We'll talk about it a lot more on the Pro America Report in upcoming days. Thank you to Ed for being such a great host, to Mason, my co-producer, for helping me keep everything on track, and to you for listening. We appreciate it so much. Go to proamericareport.com, phyllisschlafly.com, and we will see you back here tomorrow on another edition of the Pro America Report.